So, wow, this is great to see you all. Hopefully you're all here for the Unified Mindfulness Contemplative Odyssey series. I'm assuming that you're here because you have some interest in mindfulness. Is that fair to say? And some of you have been already sharing about your background, and anyone want to add on, why you're here? What is it about mindfulness that interests you? How about what is mindfulness? That interests me, trying to figure that out. Any ideas what mindfulness is?
Being present. Being present.
Being present, yeah. Awareness of anything in particular?
Yourself, your mind.
Yourself and your mind, good.
And your senses as well.
And sorry?
Your senses.
And your senses, absolutely. It's sort of hard to pin down to a definition, isn't it? And there's a good reason for that. It's a term that we hear an awful lot, and we sort of think we know what it means, but there's actually a lot of confusion about what it means. People use it for just about anything. In the past few years, it's become a fad. Mindfulness, the fad. Originally, it was in the context of meditation. It had a very specific meaning. That was back in 1910, the first time it was published in relation to Buddhism in English as mindfulness. But it's sort of been hijacked, over the past, 100 and some years. It's sort of like, you remember Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which was a take on Zen and the Art of Archery. And Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance actually did have something to do with Zen philosophy. But now there's Zen and the Art of Cooking, and Zen and the Art of Basketball, and Zen and the Art of Public Speaking. And, you ask someone, what does that mean? And Zen has come to mean something very broad, right? Or we have tantric lovemaking, as if tantric meditation practice was all about sex. Come and have a better love life with tantric lovemaking. And mindfulness is sort of turned into that. It's mindful management and mindful being a soldier. And so the fad has made it difficult to know what the word means. We all have a sense, but not really sure. And I'm absolutely thrilled that there's this much interest in mindfulness. It's inevitable that when there's a lot of interest in something, it will become a fad for a while, and then it will settle down again into something more stable that people know what it is. But for now, it's everywhere, and it means a lot of things. And then if you look at, even in the meditative community, it means a million different things. So this guy, T.W. Rhys Davids, who I presume is Welsh from his name, in the late 1800s, was one of the first Westerners to study Buddhism. That's when it was really, it wasn't even introduced to the West. It was more that the West went and met it and brought it back. So this guy was one of the first Western scholars of Buddhism, and he coined the phrase, or he didn't coin the phrase, he translated the word, a Pali word, which is sati, S-A-T-I, and he called it mindfulness. Now, Pali is the language that the Buddha spoke. It's similar to Sanskrit, and the original first chunk of writings that came out of Buddhism 2,500 years ago were written in Pali, and it's called the Pali Canon, and this is what the guy was translating. And so it's a very specific word to early Buddhist meditation. Now, then, over the next 80 years, this word in English gets translated into other Western languages. It starts getting translated back into Asian languages. And if you go to Japan now and want to do a mindfulness course, the word that they use is mindfulness, which is a Japanization of mindfulness. Mindfulness. So we've brought a translation of a translation back into the country where, you know, it was established thousands of years before. And then the West is getting more interested in Buddhism, so it's learning about Tibetan Buddhism and Zen Buddhism and Chan, which is from China, and Thai Buddhism. And each of these developed independently, historically, because there wasn't that much interaction. And so they each have their own vocabulary, and they each evolved in their own way, and each of them have words that mean things that are related to each other that have all been translated into English as mindfulness. So if you're a Tibetan Buddhist, mindfulness means something completely different, well, not completely different, but different enough from if you're a Chinese Buddhist, speaking in English. So this word mindfulness now has become very confusing. And then you have Jon Kabat-Zinn in the 90s, who started MBSR. Some of you might have heard of that, mindfulness-based stress reduction, in which he took mindfulness practice and applied it to health situations. So pain management and stress management, and took it completely out of the Buddhist context, and sort of became a household word. And then mindfulness started being defined according to Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of it, which includes present moment and awareness and non-judgmentalism, which is all part of it, but there's a lot more to mindfulness. Or, you know, I can't even say that. There's a lot more to mindfulness the way I use the word than that. So yeah, we've gotten to the present time where the word mindfulness doesn't really refer to Buddhism anymore, and I don't use it in the context of Buddhism. A lot of the practices come from Buddhism, so you'll hear about Buddhism here, but you'll also hear about other religions. But I think that we need to define a little bit what I'm talking about when I say mindfulness. And then even when I'm saying mindfulness, or when people of my ilk are teaching about it and they say mindfulness, there are lots of different things it could mean, right? So the first thing that mindfulness could mean is mindful awareness, which is what we've been talking about with the being aware of our senses and being present. That's mindful awareness. So someone can say, I'm being mindful. It means I'm having mindful awareness. Now, mindful awareness, you can be talking about a state of mindful awareness. So right now I am aware of my emotional responses and my physical sensations. So I'm having a state of mindful awareness. You can also talk about your base level of mindful awareness, which is how mindfully aware or how mindful are you in everyday life when you're not specifically trying to be mindful. So you're just bopping around town, and there's a base level of that you're just naturally mindful about what's going on. So those are a couple different ways of using mindfulness, and that's actually pretty important, this base level thing. We're going to get back to that in a minute. Mindful could also mean mindful awareness practices. And I see you taking notes, and that's great, but also don't, there's like not a test on this at the end. So mindful awareness practices, or MAPS, as they have come to be known. I'm going to actually read this because it's a definition. Mindful awareness is just a particular way of paying attention to something. But a mindful awareness practice is a specific exercise or specific exercises that systematically elevate a person's base level of mindfulness. So I can be mindful, I can be doing mindfulness. If I'm doing mindfulness, I'm probably talking about mindful awareness practices, which is doing exercises specifically for the purpose of raising my base level of mindful awareness. Are we all confused yet? It's okay. I call mindful awareness practices meditation or meditation techniques. Sometimes meditation practices. But that the reason it's got this term MAP is because there's been a lot of interest in recent years of medical and neurological research into mindfulness. And it became clear that everyone was talking about something different. And so, you know, you have this one study says that mindfulness is the best thing since sliced bread. And this other study says, no, mindfulness is bad for you. And then it turns out they're talking about two different things. So they started defining things. And mindful awareness practice is a specific term from that research that essentially means a meditation technique. So that's another thing mindfulness can mean. So just to clarify, I said that you can have temporary states of mindful awareness, meaning that sometimes you just are really aware of what's going on, right? Sometimes you fall into a really clear state. And that can happen like with sports or painting or something like that. So, you know, maybe you're a runner and you just get this really crystal clear sort of, you know everything that's going on, you can feel everything that's happening. That's a temporary state of mindful awareness. Running is not, in that sense, is not a meditation practice because it's spontaneous. It's not doing it, you're not intentionally doing it in order to increase your base level mindful awareness. You can make it a meditation practice if you do it intentionally. And, you know, you were saying about walking your dog and that sort of thing. You make those mindfulness practices or meditation practices by intentionally doing it in order to increase your mindfulness. So meditation techniques are another thing that might be referred to when someone says mindfulness. Just by the by, a lot of people will assume that mindfulness meditation is limited to the kind of meditation that came out of early Buddhism that's called Vipassana in Pali. Insight meditation is another word for it. And I reckon that this limitation comes from the fact that Mr. Rhys David's original translation referred to that original technique. But I'm going to be defining mindfulness more broadly so that it includes many techniques, you know, loving kindness and open awareness and chanting and all sorts of things that aren't that specific early Buddhist thing. So mindfulness is going to be a bit broader. Then you have the mindfulness path, right? What's a path? Oh, I've got another definition. A path is an intentional and organized regimen of meditation techniques designed to increase an individual's baseline mindfulness. So you have your techniques, but say you just come, you know, every 6 months you pop in and you do some meditation and then you go home, then you're doing meditation, but you're not on a path. Your path is going to be an intentional, sort of like a fitness regimen. You know, you do your exercises and you eat well and you do this and it's sort of a lifestyle. So intentionally participating in mindfulness activities with an intention of growing through that is a path. Mm. So when I say, you know, we encounter this on the path, that's what I'm talking about. Not that you're following the regimen that I've laid out, but just that you have set an intention for yourself to move along, to be more than just a drop-in sort of sightseer. Does that make sense? It goes without saying that everyone's path is going to be different because everyone is going to choose different things to do. So you can't look at someone else and say, oh, we're both on a meditation path, but she's not doing it the way I'm doing it, so, you know, it must be something different. It's we all share the same intention of increasing our baseline mindful awareness, which I feel like I've said that an awful lot. So that brings me to the last definition that I want, probably not, but that I want to mention, and that is unified mindfulness, which is part of the title of this series. Unified mindfulness is a system, a meditation system, which is not a path, but I suppose it could be. But so unified mindfulness is a self-contained, comprehensive, carefully formulated system of meditation techniques, or MAPS, that is designed to provide everything you need to affect revolutionary positive change in us as individuals and as a consequence in the world. So maybe you didn't know you were getting into that. We're here to change the world. But we're going to do it just a little bit at a time by changing ourselves. So unified mindfulness is just one of many systems of meditation or of mindfulness. MBSR, for example, is a system. I guess different schools of Buddhism would be systems. And there's nothing magic about unified mindfulness. I'm not teaching it because I think it's the best or the only one. I'm teaching it because it's the one I know. It works for me, so I think it's good. But, you know, there's others out there. A benefit of this system is that it really, my teacher Shinzen, who has spent 50 years creating it, really was very intentional about encompassing every contemplative practice throughout history and around the world into this system. So if at the end of the day you decide to go do something different, what you learn here will give you some grounding in what you're getting into. You'll understand the core fundamental elements that all practices share, and so you'll be able to easily transition to wherever you want to go. So, having made all of those definitions, I would like to say that I am likely to be inconsistent in my use of terms, as much as I'm going to try not to. But it's really important that I communicate clearly. So if I say something that doesn't make sense, or I use a word in a way that you thought I said I shouldn't use it, or whatever, if anything confuses you, please interrupt me and ask. I'll do my best to be clear and concise, but I can't promise perfection. Any questions before I move on to the sort of second stage, which will be less complicated and shorter? We're all good so far. Okay. So I want to talk just very briefly about this thing of elevating your base level of mindful awareness. I've said that over and over again, and that's the intention, and that's why the system was created, and that's what practices are there for. Why is this such a big deal to me? I'm going to make a big claim, which is that as you raise your base level mindful awareness, that mindful awareness is going to help you do or be whatever you want, whatever you really want. So what are some things that you guys would like to have in your lives or be? Throw out some ideas. We'll see if mindfulness can help with that.
Dealing with stress?
Absolutely, mindfulness can do that. And can do that pretty quickly.
Finishing things I start.
Okay. Yeah, there's some specific ways of addressing that with mindfulness. Other things?
Because say the visual I get when you talk about raising your base level of mindfulness is it's like as you get healthier, you're more able to just get up and go, do this or do that. You don't have to think about, oh, what are my limitations? So it's just clearing those limitations.
That's great, yeah. Clearing of limitations and that spontaneity that comes out of truly being spontaneous, not just being reckless. So yeah, that's good, and that's absolutely something that mindfulness will help with, dealing with physical pain. There's actually some medical situations in which mindfulness is objectively helpful. You know, you deal with your stress, you can lower your blood pressure. You can use it to help you with weight loss or healthy lifestyles. Another thing is getting to know yourself. So like you were saying, getting rid of those limitations, getting to know yourself more deeply and getting rid of the stories about yourself. What about being a nicer person? Anyone fancy that? Having more compassion or generosity? That's something that mindfulness can do for you. Basically, can sum it up into a number of things that mindfulness is really good for. It's good for reducing suffering, not necessarily reducing pain, but reducing suffering, increasing fulfillment. You know, I was sort of not very positive about tantric sex, but mindful sex is an option. You get to know yourself at a very deep level. It can help with behavior change, creating good habits, stopping bad habits, etc. And finally, it brings out the compassion that's available to all of us and turns us into serving people, people that are connected to one another and that are open-hearted and changing the world. So that's why you might want to elevate your base level of mindful awareness. And the logical next step would be for me to define mindful awareness. But we're going to get into that more later. I will give you a sneak peek. Mindful awareness is just a set of skills. It's not some mystical thing that we have to somehow get in touch with and pull up out of, you know, whatever. It's just three skills, and anyone can learn them. And you practice them and you get better at them. And these three skills are what enable all of these different things we've been talking about in a very dramatic but also very simple way. And those three skills are concentration, sensory clarity, and equanimity. And I'll just say very briefly, I'm not going to go into them all, but concentration is the ability to focus your attention on whatever you choose to focus your attention on for as long as you want to focus your attention on it. That is something that we're always telling our kids or you're hearing from your teachers, just concentrate, but no one tells you how. So concentration skill is something that you can learn, and meditation aside, just learning that skill can really help you in your life. Sensory clarity is being very clear on what it is you're paying attention to. So you can just stare at a candle for an hour and watch it flicker and go into a trance, but you're not really aware of the candle that you're looking at. Sensory clarity is being able to distinguish and discern in more and more detail what it is that you have chosen to pay attention to. And equanimity is, let me just read this because it's a hard thing to say briefly. And this is even not a very good definition, but hang on. Equanimity is being able to experience the senses. So you got your seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, tasting, thinking and feeling emotions, I would call those your senses, being able to experience these senses without fighting with them, resisting them, or grabbing onto them, allowing whatever comes up to happen internally. All right, we're not talking about letting someone get mugged because you have equanimity with that, but your internal experience, allowing whatever it is coming up to happen, in order that you can respond both internally and externally appropriately. And I'm just going to stop there with that. I will talk about concentration, clarity, and equanimity ad nauseum over the next year. So if that hasn't made a lot of sense to you yet, that's fine. It will make plenty of sense to you before too long.